Bargain Town now have the largest stocks of beds and headboards in Dublin. Single spring interior beds, £35. Double orthopedic beds, £99. Colonial style bunk beds, £145. That's Bargain Town of Queen Street Bridge. And Bargain Town are open till 9 p.m. on Tuesday, Thursday and Friday nights. What do you think, Terry?
The prices are only famous.
The Swiss people are master brewers of lager beer. And very clever. One day they removed all the alcohol from the wonderful lager and found that they still had a wonderful lager. Aha, they said, as they sat happily among the alcohol-free lager bottles. All we need now is an imposing name for it. And in the early hours of the following morning, they came up with a name. Moosey. Moosey, hey! Maybe that explains where some of the removed alcohol went. Still, what's in a name? It's what's in the bottle that counts. And that is a sparkling clarity, a fine head, and the true lager taste. You'll have to try, Moosey, otherwise you'll never believe me.
Maxim's, Dublin's number one nightclub, is open tonight. Maxim's, 27 Clare Street behind Trinity. For the best music, greatest atmosphere, and the nicest people, it's got to be Maxim's. Maxim's, where all the elegant people go. See you tonight.
Fly Irish. Fly Avair to the Isle of Man for the holiday of a lifetime. Call Avair, Dublin 429-644.
Broadcasting to Dublin on 828 kHz AM and 88 FM in stereo.
Radio Nova.
It's 7 o'clock. I'm David Malone. Good evening. The New Ireland Forum met in plenary session in Dublin Castle today. The forum had a preliminary exchange of views on integrated economic planning and coordination in the whole island. They agreed on guidelines for a study of the economic benefits and costs of various broad political alternatives. The forum also considered the written contributions that have been received to date and discussed arrangements for oral representations in September and October. The forum agreed to hold a two-day meeting on the 20th and 21st of September. The concurrent visits to London by the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Mr. Barry, and the Vice President of Sinn Féin, Gerry Adams, have seen sharp criticism by both men on each other's policies and ambitions. This evening, Mr. Barry told members of the Anglo-Irish Parliamentary Group in the House of Commons in London that the people of Ireland will not readily give the blatant fascism of the Republican movement a hearing, nor, he said, would they forgive those who support the spokesman of violence for reasons of publicity or theatricality or well-intentioned wrong-headedness. Tomorrow, Mr. Barry will have a mini-summit meeting with the Northern Ireland Secretary, Mr. Pryor. For his part, Gerry Adams went to the House of Commons in London today, but not to the Chamber, to meet half a dozen Labour MPs. Present were the Greater London Council leader, Ken Livingstone, and former Labour MP, Tony Benn. Mr. Adams said that his visit to London was an attempt by Sinn Féin to open up dialogue with British people and their representatives. The RUC in the north say that the man shot dead during a post office robbery in Lurgan today had fired a sawn-off shotgun at the police patrol which came upon the holdup. The dead man has been named as Anthony O'Hare, aged 25, from Craigavon. Two masked men were surprised by the police patrol, and as the raiders made off, they threw money onto the ground. The RUC say that a shotgun was found at the scene and a second man is being questioned. The Minister of State at the Department of Education, Mr. Donal Creed, today announced that the Vocational Educational Committee for County Dublin will receive a grant of over £68,000. The money will be used for a youth development project at Tallaght and Blanchardstown in conjunction with the Youth Development Organisation. A Dublin court has granted an extradition application by the RUC in the north for a man wanted in Northern Ireland in connection with the murder of Sir Norman Strong and his son James in 1981. He's James Anthony Gerard Shannon, aged 24, who is originally from Dungannon. His lawyers are expected to appeal to the High Court against the ruling. Fog off the West Welsh coast has caused severe disruption to SeaLink ferry sailings to Dunleary. The St. David is due to leave Holyhead about now and is due in Dunleary at about 10:30 tonight. The ferry will sail again for Holyhead at 12:30 tomorrow evening. Independent radio news from Dublin at 7:03. In England, a High Court judge has rejected a move by a mother of 10 to prevent birth control advice and contraceptives being given to her girls under 16 without her parents' consent. Mrs. Victoria Gillick from Cambridgeshire burst into tears when the judgment was given. She said that the right to protect her children had been taken away. After 3 days of violence in Sri Lanka, at least 57 people are reported dead. In the worst incident, 37 prisoners were massacred when other inmates broke into their cells at a jail in the capital, Colombo. Most of the prison victims were Tamils, that's a minority group in Sri Lanka. In an effort to stamp out the wave of killing and looting, the government there is now imposing a nationwide dusk-to-dawn curfew. Three Arab students have been killed and about 30 injured in a gun and grenade attack in a college in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Four masked gunmen drove up into the college in Hebron and opened fire on the students. A curfew has now been imposed on the town. British Airways and British Caledonian have won their appeal to stop the Laker Airways liquidator going ahead with a multi-million pound claim against them. In the claim made in the American courts, the liquidator had alleged that the Laker SkyTrain operations failed as a result of conspiracy by competitor airlines. Sir John Donaldson, the master of the rolls, said in the Court of Appeal today that to allow the claim to go ahead would amount to a total denial of justice to the two airlines. The Nicaraguan Interior Minister, Mr. Thomas Borge, has said that America's decision to send warships to Central America is a threat to world peace. He also accused the Reagan regime of rejecting an offer by Nicaragua to sit down to peace talks with its Central American neighbors. Only those who nourish war and confer on themselves a sort of natural right to interfere in the affairs of another country can refuse to negotiate, said Mr. Borge. The Coronation Street star Peter Adamson, who plays Len Fairclough in the television series, has said that he's very relieved that he was found not guilty of two charges of indecently assaulting 2 8-year-old girls and that the ordeal is now over. Speaking outside the Burnley Crown Court, Mr. Adamson said that he wanted to do now was to get back to the privacy and the love of his family. A racing pigeon has returned home to Manchester after setting out for Penzance in Cornwall on the 11th of June. The pigeon flew off course and ended up in Canada. The journey took the bird 16 days, which is believed to be a new world record for a racing pigeon. However, he was spared the effort of having to fly back and instead arrived home courtesy of Air Canada. And the financial report for this Tuesday evening. On the Dublin markets, the Irish pound closed at 79.50 pence sterling, and against the American dollar, it closed at $1.21.35. On the foreign exchange market, one Irish punt is worth 3.1580 Deutschmarks, 9.4960 French francs, 180 Spanish pesetas, 3.5345 Dutch guilders. On the London market, spot gold closed at $426 by fine ounce, and spot silver at £8.13 per fine ounce. The Financial Times Index closed up 8.0 at 708.9, and at 5 o'clock this evening, the Dow Jones Index was down 1.8 at 1231.07. That's the financial report, courtesy, as always, of Comex Commodity Brokers, on 608-977.
Radio Nova.
Good evening and welcome. This is Dublin Today on 828 AM. Over on Nova 88 FM, the rock show has just begun. But here on Dublin Today, between now and 7:30, we'll be talking to the editor of the Irishman newspaper in San Francisco about a recent survey which shows that over 40 million Americans are of Irish descent. But first, reports of a Libyan boycott of Irish agricultural exports still remain unconfirmed by the government this evening, although it has been reliably established that the Libyans have informed Ireland's main livestock exporter to Libya, Seamus Purcell, that if the Irish government refuses to buy oil from Libya, they will find it impossible to continue their business with him. At the weekend, Mr. Purcell flew to Tripoli for discussions with the Libyan authorities on the threatened boycott, and two Irish representatives of the National Petroleum Corporation are also in the Libyan capital for discussions on oil supplies. However, Peter Evans of the Irish National Petroleum Corporation insisted this afternoon that it was not a joint visit and did not have a joint purpose. He said the visit of the National Petroleum Corporation delegates was normal and would merely seek to discover whether Libyan crude oil was any more suitable for Whitegate or any less costly than it had been. He emphasized, however, that more detailed technical tests would need to be done on Libyan oil before any discussions on price could be take place. Mr. Evans said the possibility of importing oil from Libya had always been a possibility since the establishment of the Irish-Libyan Joint Committee on Oil Purchases in Dublin last May. The two Petroleum Corporation delegates are due back in Dublin tomorrow. Well, despite denials all round, the reported Libyan boycott, tension has grown in the livestock exporting business over the boycott reports, which many of them claim had only been a matter of time. Earlier today, Jenny McIver spoke to Vincent Bartley, Group Secretary of the Bartley Livestock Exporters Company, and she asked him for his reaction to the Libyan threat.
Well, it's one of slight surprise because of the way they've suddenly introduced it. It has been expected to a slight extent over the past few months, ever since the Libyan trade delegation visited this country earlier this year. They at that time were asking for more two-way trade between Libya and Ireland. As it's probably common knowledge, the trade between this country and Libya, that is Irish exports to Libya, is worth about 1,000 million per year. And the trade coming back, the exports from Libya to Ireland seem rather minuscule compared to that.
What about livestock exports? What are they worth specifically?
I would estimate myself, it's just a conservative opinion, but I would think about 20 to 25 million per year pounds.
Well, when you say you're slightly surprised, why are you slightly surprised? I mean, if they did meet last May and talk about this oil livestock deal, if you like, why are you surprised that if this hasn't evened out or balanced out in terms of trade, that this situation has developed?
Well, first of all, last May they didn't really discuss oil and cattle as such. They just discussed the trade in general and the figures that I've mentioned. It surprises me because they didn't seem to give much warning about the embargo coming up. It's just since yesterday it seems very sudden indeed.
Well, you've called on the government to do something about it, to respond to the crisis at the moment. What exactly are you saying to the government?
Well, I would be asking the government to try and resolve the situation or look at the import of Libyan oil into this country to try and keep the trade going, as it were. It's purely because the trade that we do with other countries might be affected if the embargo continues.
But surely you can't expect the government to say, okay, we're going to trade in case we lose these export markets if what they're trading to us isn't going to be beneficial or indeed cost effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, it again goes back to the trade delegation in May. Surely there must be some way that they can try and balance a little bit of the trade more towards Libya. I'm not really aware because I'm not in the oil business. But it seems there's room for manoeuvring somewhere within the scope of the figures we mentioned.
Well, a government spokesman would say that last year, for example, Libyan oil, when it was very expensive, And also one of the other reasons that they won't import it is because it doesn't apparently suit the Whitegate, it isn't suitable for the use of Whitegate. So you can't expect them to bow down to what could be seen as Libyan blackmail.
Yes, indeed, I would nearly agree with that. But the price of oil last year compared to this year is quite different. As you know, the OPEC agreement in London fell through earlier this year. And that leaves quite a buyer's market for oil at the present stage, I would imagine. But I couldn't clarify the comment because, again, I'm not in the oil business.
Well, the government are saying at the moment that this boycott is, in fact, unconfirmed. They haven't had official reports of it, though they're not surprised that this situation has developed. Now, what are the implications of it for companies like yourself?
The implications would be that if the embargo is to continue, it would leave the other existing North African markets very vulnerable to stiff competition in those particular countries. Purely because the Libyan market is quite a big one for Ireland, and it represents quite a large cattle population going there every year. If this cattle population is diverted into other countries, it'll mean quite a cutthroat operation taking place, particularly in the Mediterranean area.
Well, for example, to your company, what would it mean in terms of revenue, loss of revenue?
Well, because it's speaking in the future, I couldn't really say, but I couldn't give an estimate of that figure.
So how do you see the situation developing at this stage?
It's very hard to tell with some countries in that area. I would imagine that because the Libyans need our cattle, they should, I think, resolve it. I think they will.
I think they've put the onus on the Irish government through Seamus Purcell to do that.
All I can say is that it looks that way. I can't comment on it any further than that.
Well, if the government don't intercede fairly quickly and this boycott escalates to companies like yourself, apart from the bigger company of Seamus Purcell, what are the implications in terms of employment?
Employment is it's a fairly small-scale thing in the live cattle export. The unions in this country are, in fact, mostly against the export of live cattle because it takes the jobs away from the meat factories in this country. They'd like to see more slaughtering done here and then the export continue from there.
Vincent Barclay, Secretary of the Barclay Livestock Exporters Group. You're listening to Dublin Today, and the Gig Guide is next.
On Radio Nova.
The Westland Rose Summer Project is continuing today with a crazy dress day. Now, if that's too tame for you, then you might like to wait until tomorrow for a visit to the UCD Pig Farm. The Whitehall Community Centre will be giving free legal advice tomorrow evening from 7 to 9 p.m. It's located at the Whitehall Social Services Centre in Collins Avenue.
By far the most outrageous event of this evening must be Mr. Pussy, who'll be displaying a lot of frolics at Maxime's tonight. Week 3 of the Fox Rock Summer Project is continuing at 8 o'clock this evening with a separate typing and dressmaking courses at the Cavintilly Community School. Also at 8 o'clock, there's a treasure hunt. All prospectors are asked to gather at the project office at the back of Fox Rock Church.
At 8 o'clock this evening, the Sackville Springland pay in Slattery's in Capel Street. O'Callaghan and Hunter's Purse will be at the Tommy Dunn's Tavern at 8. And two-thirds of Scullion, namely Philip King and Sonny Kendall, are playing at the Meeting Place again at 8 o'clock. Meanwhile, here's a track from the new Scullion album, This Is Evil.
Happened to you? To me that feels sad.
Listening to Dublin Today on Radio Nova. It's 19 minutes past 7, and if you've just joined us, you are, of course, very welcome. Niall O'Dowd, editor and publisher of the Irishman newspaper, the largest Irish publication in California, is currently in Dublin researching articles for future editions of the paper. Acknowledged as a leading expert on the Irish-American dimension, O'Dowd is the West Coast correspondent for the Irish Press and is also the presenter of The Irish Magazine, the only all-Irish television show in the United States. Well, earlier today, Linda Conway spoke to Niall O'Dowd in the Dublin Today studio and asked him about the establishment of the Irishman 4 years ago in San Francisco.
Well, basically, Linda, there was census figures recently showed that 40 million Americans say they're of Irish descent, and California has more Irish Americans than any other state. And I was an Irish person resident in San Francisco, and there was a very obvious need there for an Irish publication. So myself and a partner started up about 5 years ago, and it's gone quite well since.
It is a monthly publication.
Yes, it is, and we reach about 60,000 Irish Americans in Northern California and throughout the state, and it's basically dealing with the community and with Irish issues and Irish American issues, and it's enjoyed a large amount of popularity.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe your average reader in terms, I mean, are they an Irish immigrant, Irish American, what?
Usually it's broken down the middle, 50-50. A lot of second and third generation Irish Americans who were very interested in the old sod and all that kind of stuff. And then we have a number of young Irish immigrants and the traditional Irish who read it also. But we also have a highly upwardly mobile group of Irish Americans who are very interested in the political developments back here and everything else that's going on.
Is it a problem then at all to cater for the needs of that sort of cross-section? I mean, you have the kind of the romantic Irish view, obviously, and then the more political view.
Yeah, well, I think the stereotypes about Irish Americans are probably as misleading over here as the stereotypes about Ireland are in America. You know, the shillelaghs and shamrocks are reciprocated over here with this idea of all Irish Americans, you know, drink green beer and run around the place on St. Patrick's Day screaming about being Irish. In fact, there is a highly articulate consciousness in Irish America about the Irish situation and about Ireland in general, not just the political thing. And we have found that treating our readership in a very mature way and dealing with issues and taking them very seriously, that they respond very well. And I think a lot of Irish people would be surprised by the level of discussion that Irish Americans have about questions like Northern Ireland, about the economic development here in Ireland, and particularly a lot of Irish Americans who are very interested in investing in Ireland, who want to find out as much as they can about the country.
You were talking there really about misunderstandings between Irish people here and Irish Americans. Most Irish people here tend to associate the Irish American consciousness with the movement NORAID. Is that the case in America at the moment?
Well, certainly NORAID are a significant part of that. They're by no means the total part. I often liken them to a political organization here in Ireland, one of the major parties perhaps. They are significant on the American scene, but they are by no means the only significant movement there. And in fact, NORAID, while they're long established, would not be the major Irish American organization. There are many other organizations involved both in the politics and the economics and also in the cultural and historical aspect of Ireland, who get very little coverage over here. It's a typical example of the stereotype again, where pretty much Irish people in Ireland think of Irish Americans as a group who are very rabidly pro-IRA or whatever, and there is certainly that element there, and you know, that's a total acknowledgement of that in America, but there is also another group who are very, very concerned about ways of helping Ireland, not necessarily on the political front, but economically and everything else. So mm-hmm. NORAID is certainly a big factor, but, you know, I think they would also say that they're not the only factor here.
I have in front of me a copy of The Irishman, and it's mainly dealing with the census. The Irish lobby must be very strong if there's that many Irish people in America at the moment.
Well, when you get a figure like 40 million, you tend to get enthusiastic. Unfortunately, one could almost wipe out, I'd say, 30 million of those as just occasional Irishmen or Saint Patrick's Day Irishmen or women. But there is a significant movement developing in the last 10 years. We now have two Irish lobbies in Congress, the Friends of Ireland and the Ad Hoc Congressional Committee headed up by Mario Bianchi, and both of those weren't there 10 years ago. There's been an enormous increase in the number of Irish organisations in the United States concerned with every aspect of Irish-American culture. One of the things that I'd like to stress, which is very dear to my heart, is that the idea of Irishness does not end at the borders of Ireland. There is an Irish consciousness in many countries in this world, Australia, America, Canada, just to name three, where people, we must remember we are an immigrant race, and about 8 million of our people have emigrated in the last 100 years. And people in America who've never been to Ireland have their own Irishness, which is very unique and real to them. And they don't necessarily compare or contrast it to the Irish in Ireland. It's just their own type of culture. So the Irish Americans have this aspect of Irish culture, which is, they're probably as Irish as the Jewish people in America are Israelis or whatever. They are very supportive of Ireland. And perhaps a little bit, you know, starry-eyed, but, you know, when you come back to Ireland and you see so much doom and gloom, it really is no harm at all to see somebody who thinks very, or some people who think very optimistically about this country.
Mm. Although I suppose if their attitude to Ireland is quite naive, it must be fairly simple for American politicians to manipulate those feelings and obviously put themselves into power through their vote.
I think that the Irish issue is not major enough in the United States to put people in power. I think it's starting to go that way, but it's still a long way off. I think that the sense of the problem of Northern Ireland is one that we still get just playing into the media. Obviously, the hunger strikes probably sounds and that had a major impact in Irish America. There is a growing intellectualization of the problem over there. There's a lot of Irish American groups who are very different to the previous groups who are dealing with it in a much more sophisticated level, including lobbying and everything else, and that's something that will come through in the next few years. I think the naivety is fast disappearing, and I think that the there's a very, very deep feeling of goodwill towards Ireland that I think it would be great if we could tap it over here in Ireland sometime in the future, certainly in terms of economics. As you know, Irish Americans are supposedly the best off group of all, and very many of them would give the right hand to help Ireland, and something that we're trying to work on over there.
If we can talk a little bit now about the bread and butter issue of advertising, mm-hmm. What would be the point of any Irish company wanting to advertise in the Irish manner? More or less preaching for converted in a way, isn't it?
Well, basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to reach as broad an audience as possible, and we have several Irish advertisers with us, the Aer Lingus, the Irish Tourist Board, people like that who find a very good response from our newspaper. Basically what we're doing is we're trying to build an Irish-American consciousness that is greater than anything that's there at the moment. It sounds like a grandiose task, but it's actually, when there's nothing there in front of you, there are no other papers, really substantial papers on the West Coast. We are dealing with a population of Irish Americans, 3.7 million, that's larger than the population of the Republic of Ireland, which is a major sort of a thing to be dealing with, and you're the only publication that's directly dealing with that. You do have a lot of access to people in power and people in, you know, prominent positions, and in that sense, like, advertising with the Irishman is a pretty good medium mm-hmm. for reaching those kind of people.
In terms, it doesn't deal specifically, at this stage I should point out, with just Irish issues. There have been some fairly interesting items in the paper throughout its years. For you as an editor, what was the most interesting piece you've actually carried in your paper?
Interesting, I would have to say, my interview with Charles Manson, which has nothing to do with being Irish, but he did have an Irish Catholic chaplain, and I did get to see him, and I did a two-hour interview with him. Obviously, he's what they call in America the bump in the night. He's the most feared and hated figure there. So I did an interview with him, and that was very interesting, obviously. A bit scary, but very interesting. Ted Kennedy was another interesting interview. People like that, you know, you would meet in the course of events because you're in the Irish-American ambience. I would have to say, though, that, you know, say last week I interviewed Tom Hayden, Jane Fonda's husband, and it's fascinating how you can find out. His middle name is Thomas Emmett Hayden. His parents were from County Monaghan. He's very, very interested in Ireland. He's been here several times. It's amazing how you can find so much Irishness, even though people would never think of it in those terms, with these people. And anybody who's been to America can tell you that being Irish in America is about as different from being Irish in Britain as one can possibly imagine. It's a tremendous, plus for you if you are Irish over there, and I find that makes access to leading figures very, very easy.
In terms of the future of the paper now, finally, where do you actually see the Irishman going? I mean, do you actually have an idea as to what you'd like to see in the future?
If I had a couple of million dollars, yeah. No, basically, I see us continuing to expand on the West Coast and becoming the major Irish newspaper west of the Mississippi, let's say. We're in a good situation. We're in the richest state in the world, in the United States. We've got a very large Irish American population, and we're only starting to scratch the surface, really, of what's really there. And I think that's something that people over here can bear in mind, that there's an awful lot of Irish Americans over there who feel very, very good about this.
Niall O'Dowd, editor of the Irishman newspaper, which is based in San Francisco. And finally this evening, the closing news headlines with David.
The New Ireland Forum met in plenary session today in Dublin Castle. There's to be another meeting of the forum on the 20th and 21st of September. The Minister for Foreign Affairs has condemned the visit to London by the Sinn Féin Vice President Gerry Adams as a mission of destruction. The man who was shot dead by two IUC men following a post office robbery outside Lurgan today has been named. He was 25-year-old Anthony O'Hare from Craigavon. SeaLink ferry services from Dunleary to Holyhead and vice versa have been seriously disrupted by fog off the Welsh coast. Coronation Street star Peter Adamson says he's greatly relieved at being cleared on charges of indecently assaulted two 80-year-old girls. And three students have been killed in a fresh outbreak of violence on Israel's West Bank. The weather forecast, cloudy and hazy in all areas this evening. The city high is 17 degrees Celsius, and the winds on Dublin Bay are light to moderate, force 2 to 3.
Thank you, David, and that's Dublin Today. The programme was produced by Linda Conway with Shane McGowan on sound. We're back at 7:07 tomorrow evening. Until then, from me, Brian Dobson, from David, and from the rest of the Dublin Today team, a very good evening to you. Bye-bye.
Fancy something good in bed? Well, you'll get it at Bargain Town of Queen Street Bridge, Dublin's largest stock of the beds, orthopedic beds, storage and bunk beds and heads. So, if you're fond of the old bed, like myself, nip round to Bargain Town.
Hurry on down to Bargain Town.
The prices are only famous.
Hiya, Jenny.
Oh, hello. Come in.
Thanks. I haven't seen you since that time we went to the Gresham Grill.
Well, my back's been bad.
From pushing the car home last time, was it? Sorry about that.
Oh, well, I suppose it wasn't your fault. And we did enjoy the Gresham Grill.
Yeah, we had coffee and Danish pastries, do you remember?
Yes. And you wouldn't believe that it was only 99p each.
Oh, it's a great place, the Gresham Grill. Smashing food and the value. Anyway, I've got a tenner, so what about the Gresham Grill tonight?
Well, I don't know. I mean, my bag.
Oh, don't worry about the transport. It's organized. Come on out and look.
A tandem?
Well, the car is broken down and the weather's been so good.
Oh, come on. If it means a meal in the Gresham Grill, it's worth it.
The Gresham Grill. Good food at prices to suit everyone.
Rory Sheehy.
Midsummer Madness sale continues with even further reductions. Lady sandals were £20, now £9.99. Old Startwhite and K-Kid proof sandals, £9.99. Midsummer Madness gone mad at Rory Sheehy Footwear, Ballybrack, Grey and Burhouse.
DSF, 16 days with a pop and four people sharing. Departing August weekend to Torremolinos or Benal Medina from £275 plus taxes. And there's 40% reduction for children. TSS 47 Cable Street. Call TSS now, 726-554. That's 726-554.
Le Café de Paris. Does French food cost the earth?
Mais non, mesdames et messieurs, pas au Café de Paris. The bistro of many facets. For you, the cost-conscious customer, the best in French cuisine.
Relax in intimate surroundings in Le Café de Paris at 6 to 7 St. Stephen's Green on the first floor beside the Galleria. Open 7 days a week from noon till midnight.
Colin Hayes, Radio Nova.
type of boy who is always on the road.